Hey Sharks fans, thanks for checking out another podcast from Teal Town, USA. Today we speak with David Staples from the Edmonton Journal about what's going on with Drew Remenda and the broadcast crew up in Edmonton. Welcome, David Staples from the Edmonton Journal, to the podcast. Obviously, we're here to talk about what is going on with Drew Remenda that you've broken, that he is no longer going to be doing color commentary, being ostensibly replaced by Louis DeBrusque to join Kevin Quinn. Sportsnet hasn't even made an official announcement on this yet. Do you have any other details on this?
So it was Jim Matheson of the Edmonton Journal who broke it. I'm a columnist at the Journal. I actually cover politics, but I write a hockey blog called The Cult of Hockey. So it's Jim's scoop. And Jim's been covering, he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's been covering the NHL. He's been covering the Oilers since 1972. So he's got his sources, and he reported last week that Remenda is, he's not out, but Louis's taken over as the main color guy, Louis DeBrusque, who did that job before Remenda came on. And I think Louis's last year was 74, 75, if I'm not mistaken. Remenda's last year, whatever that was, the next year he went to Edmonton, right? The last year in San Jose, then he goes to Edmonton, I believe.
Yes.
And so he's been doing it for about 3 or 4 years. I like Drew's work, but I'm in a minority in Edmonton. He's really not that popular at all with Oilers fans for a number of reasons. So he's going to be doing, whenever Louis DeBrusque is doing Hockey Night in Canada broadcasts on the weekend, Drew will step in. But he's also going to be doing between period analysis, which is what DeBrusque was doing before. So they've kind of switched jobs, essentially. And Drew will still be a big part of the broadcast. He'll give his take in between periods. So we'll see how he does with that and if he can build up his popularity. It's interesting to know that when DeBrusque left that job of color commentator in 2014-15, he wasn't that popular at it. But he got a lot more popular with his between period stuff. He got in smaller doses, people liked him better. So maybe the same thing will happen with Drew Remenda.
Boy, I don't know what is going on with Remenda. I don't know if it's his refusal to, I don't want to say be a rah-rah guy and maybe, or build the brand. Yeah, I mean, in the interview that we did with him a few months ago, that seemed to be where he thought everything was headed, that maybe ownership doesn't want unadulterated honesty in their analysis, maybe. I'm sure it's a very fine line that guys in Remenda's position have to kind of balance between building the brand yet still maintaining some credibility in giving an honest assessment and analysis of what's going on in that particular game.
Maybe it's just circumstances. Maybe if you're the color commentator on a team which stinks, which the Oilers did last year, and everyone had high expectations. And then DeBrusque in 2014-15, right? This is years of broadcasting a team that stinks, right? And maybe you're going to be negative, and maybe just people get tired of you. Maybe if the Oilers had been a winning team last year and Drew had lots of fun stuff to talk about, maybe this wouldn't be happening. It's a possibility. I know, like, there were some problems with Drew. So the main ones were when he first got here, Drew was in love with San Jose, and he's made that clear. I think he loved living there. He loved the team. He loved the organization. He loved everything about San Jose. And it was weird to hear about it all the time in Edmonton. Like, who cares? Like, yeah. Good for you, bud. Why are you telling us? We don't care. We don't care at all. And so he didn't, it took him a while to realize that, which was a big mistake, right? Like, he was so attached to your community, which is great, you know, for Drew, but you're not living there anymore. You're on a, this is Oilers hockey. People are pretty keen about it. You better be completely involved in that world now, not 1 foot back in San Jose. So this year he cut that out. Actually, I actually was taught writing about that last summer. And he, I don't know if he reads The Cult of Hockey or not, but he completely cut that out, to his credit. I think his strength is he knows McClellan really well. Yeah. He's an insider. He knows the game really well. I think he's not afraid to criticize players now and then. A lot of the commentators are like, especially the former players, it's like, I'm still on the home team. Like, I'm still part of the team. I'm one of the guys. I can't criticize the guys, the fellas. It is so tedious listening to, and DeBrusque, that was his problem before when he was a color commentator. And I'm not looking forward to it again. Like, unless he is more forthcoming and analysts and analyzing the game, you know, the typical thing, there's a goal against. Hey, who made the mistakes? You know, what happened from a technical point of view? A lot of people say, well, we all know hockey. We don't need to know that. No, actually, this can be kind of complicated, exactly what went wrong in a hockey game to allow goals against. It's not obvious always. Someone like Ray Ferraro is brilliant. Looking at a play and in a moment ascertaining exactly what went wrong, who did it. It's a hard thing to do. And I don't think actually a lot of the hockey commentators can do it, is the truth. Even though they've played NHL hockey and know the game, they're not able in a moment to look at a play and do that kind of work. But Drew's not bad at it. He's pretty good at it. And I really like that as a student of the game. I really loved the way that he would get into some of the technical nitty gritty. So I'm going to he's really newsworthy when he's like doing podcasts with you or interviews with Oilers Now, which is the Oilers affiliated broadcast here in town. Yep. He's always got interesting things to say. So I'm hopeful that he's going to be really interesting between periods, and I'm going to miss him personally. That said, it's not like he was like, you know, for us in Edmonton, Ray Ferraro's way up here. Like in Canada, he's viewed as the best by far. Mike Johnson's viewed as really good. And I know there's a few guys that we don't know about covering the American teams that do color that are also really good. I think Kurtz, was there a guy called Kurtz in your town that was doing? What's his name?
You don't mean Curtis Brown?
No, Kevin Kurtz. No, what's his name in San Jose?
Oh, Kevin Kurz?
Yeah, Kurz.
Yeah, now with the Athletic.
I heard him on the radio. I think I heard him on the radio on TV. I thought he was pretty good. So there's people who have been, there are people around the United States who are really good at it too. But it's a, you know, it's like any profession, right? There's going to be 80% of the people in the middle and then 10% of the top who are really good in 10% of the bottom who shouldn't be doing it. You know, Drew was somewhere in the middle. So it's not exactly a huge loss here in Edmonton, but I'm going to miss him.
I'm one of the fans that, you know, I'm part of that beloved fan base that always enjoyed Drew on the broadcast. When you meet him in person, I mean, really personable guy, will talk to you as long as you want to have something to say, and really direct, really upfront. And his chemistry with Randy Hahn was undeniable. You know, they got some Emmys in the trophy cases and whatnot. So it was a good broadcast. And I know Jamie Baker was not, he knew that first year was going to be tough because Remenda was so beloved by the fan base, but Baker's really kind of found his spot here. But it's just weird to see this happen with Remenda, especially from a San Jose Sharks fan's perspective, when you're like, God, we would love to have him back, you know, if things weren't working there. And it surprised a lot of us to hear that Remenda wasn't getting, you know, on the right side of the Edmonton fans. And I think you're absolutely right. I've had center ice for a while, and I pick up some of those Edmonton games, and because I want to hear Drew's take, and I love his call. But I could hear you could hear it in the interview we did with him a few months back that, yeah, he loves San Jose. He would love to be back here. Obviously has so all those ties to the community, been here so long, essentially since the start of the franchise. So from what we understand, ownership didn't appreciate the honesty, and so his contract wasn't renewed. And from what I understand, that even came to a shock to his partner, Randy Hahn, when it was actually first announced. I think if you go back on Twitter, Randy was, wait, what? What just happened? So I think Drew will probably do great in the intermissions. And then you still get those weekend games where he can hop in and do color. But
sure. I don't think he had particularly good chemistry here in Edmonton with Kevin Quinn, who's the play-by-play guy. And actually, I think Quinn is like not as good at his job as Dremenda was. Like, I think he's hard to listen to. He's not very smooth. I think that, like, you hate to say this about, like, this is his job and his livelihood. And nonetheless, it's in the public eye, and this is one of the things we do. So I just don't think Kevin Quinn is a very good play-by-play guy. And I think if Drew had been with someone who was really slick and smooth and easy on the ears, that he might have come across. There are two guys who stumbled now and then, and kind of like just in terms of their, I don't know, like if there's a harsh meter in terms of listening to the human voice, mm-hmm. but I think both of them rated fairly highly on it. Like they're just the tone of their voice could come. It's like arr, 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 the whole broadcast, both of them. And I think that might make Louis, because Louis's not like that. Louis is smoother. That might make the broadcast a little bit more appealing to the fans. We did a poll at the blog, and we had like more than 2,000 people, and 70% wanted Louis, and 20% like Bob Stauffer, who's the color guy on the radio, and then 10% like Drew. So it's not even close. It's a no-brainer from the owner's perspective. And I don't – so this is the – like Drew might want to blame the owner, saying the owner doesn't want too negative, but I think the fans have spoken. Like this is clearly something that's really popular with the fans. And that's probably very difficult for Drew to accept, but that's the reality. He just wasn't, people weren't, they don't like his work that much. And that's the truth.
No. And I totally understand that, but that's what's so, I don't know. I guess that's what I find so interesting about this is the fact that it was, I guess, kind of handled completely opposite here, where the ownership there was reacting to the fans not liking Drew, whereas down here, they loved him. It was just the owner.
I see.
Didn't
That's like, the owner you're talking about, not liking Drew, is the San Jose owner.
Yeah, yeah. Hasso Plattner, evidently, from what I've heard, a lot of, nothing has ever been confirmed because, you know, Hasso Plattner comes out, you know, he's like Groundhog Day. You see him once a year, and that's about it. He doesn't do anything with the media hardly at all. I think the last time he's done anything media-wise was during the Stanley Cup Final in 2016. So you don't see the guy, but tons of rampant speculation that it was Hasso that said he was the one that made the call because he's, you know, the owner's sitting in Germany and he's streaming games on TV and he's going, you know, geez, what this guy, I pay this guy's salary and he's slagging my team all the time. And it didn't matter that the fans absolutely loved the guy. It was ridiculous. There was this huge push to get Drew to go onto Twitter. And I think it lasted for about 3 weeks. And he's like, yeah, I don't need this in my life. But just because he didn't want to deal with it, whereas Randy is very active on social media. Drew Rusinowski, the radio play-by-play for the Sharks, is pretty active on social media as well. But Drew, that was actually kind of a running joke on broadcasts, you know, about not being on the Twitter machine.
Speaks to his wisdom if he wants to stay off Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, so it sounds like people there... And you had a great team. You've had a great team for a long time. And so criticism of a really good team may go over a little bit better. It is a different kind of fan base in San Jose than Edmonton. It's probably more newer fans. So I don't think he was overly critical. I have never found him that way, honestly. In fact, I find him – I think what might actually make him unpopular is he stands up for unpopular players. So in Edmonton, there's a real tendency to run players out of town, to turn against players. It happened recently with Justin Schultz. It was happening with Jordan Eberle, these huge, loud, angry factions of fans. Now Drew didn't like Eberle, but he supported Justin Schultz's game, would say positive things about him. Chris Russell is another player. He would stand up for continually. And I think that, as much as anything in truth, is what soured him with many fans. They just hate these players. So Drew standing up for them really made them mad. And he's kind of forceful in the way he stood up for players. He wasn't quiet about it. Like he would be pretty positive. So maybe I like those players, so I'm good with what he was doing. So maybe that's why I'm more of a Drew Remenda fan. I think I would like to see kind of the next, like if you did one of those charts where the circles meet, like between people who hate Chris Russell, Venn diagram, between people who hate Chris Russell, Justin Schultz, and Drew Remenda. It would almost be two circles over top of each other. Three circles over top of each other.
Was Yakupov another guy you had an issue with?
Yeah, he criticized him for his practice habits. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it's pretty clear Neil Yakupov is...
I think Remenda was spot IQ, on.
Lacked hockey IQ and not NHL caliber hockey player because of it in the end. Weirdly, like for someone who just absolutely destroyed it in junior hockey, but happens now and then.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this works out. I'm definitely going to be paying attention to the Oilers broadcasts and see how he does during those intermission spots. You know, we have for our intermission spots out here for the regional network, we have former player Curtis Brown typically And occasionally you'll see a couple other former players, whether it's Kyle McLaren makes an occasional appearance every once in a while. And Kevin Kurz, as you mentioned earlier, used to be part of that, but that was when he was basically the kind of the beat guy for the regional sports network. But now that he's transitioned to The Athletic, you see him on NHL Network now, but you don't see him on the regional sports network anymore for some reason.
Yeah, I was seeing his analysis when the Oilers played the Sharks in the playoffs, and I can't remember where it was, but I just remember being impressed with the guy and thinking, man, he knows a lot about what he's talking to and is giving some interesting analysis. So,
you know, there's actually a faction of fans here that give him a lot of grief. And I think sometimes because maybe Kurz can be overly honest on certain things, or they just not looking at everything through the teal glasses. And San Jose has definitely had their share of players that a good amount of fans would like to see leave town as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Mikael Bodker being the last one.
You sure found an elegant way of getting rid of him, like the GM did. So get credit to Doug Wilson for that, to get rid of that contract like he did.
Absolutely.
I can't remember the details, just like, oh man, like, man, how did he do that? How did he shed a contract? Because I knew from watching San Jose last year that this is a player who was on the outs and not living up to his contract. So,
well, and if you look at it, just we ran the numbers and we're looking at it just based on a historical thing that Bodker with Arizona, like, he would have up and down seasons where it was 51 points one year, 26 the next year, 51 the next year. And so his first season here, I don't know if it's that he is not jiving with the DeBoer system. Maybe he's not as defensively aware or responsible as he needs to be. Of course, he had that first season was very down here for him. And then it was also the case of they couldn't really find him line mates. Then you're thinking, well, the following year, this will be the bounce back. He still just could not find the rhythm, even though in preseason, Kevin Kurz pointing out that he's, you know, tried to change his game a little bit to jive more with what the Sharks are trying to do in that system. And it's still, he would have just little blips, you know, he'd have a good week and then three not so great weeks, and he'd have a good week. And then that was definitely a lot of people, especially coming in after these playoffs, going, oh my Lord, two more years of Bodker, really? So yeah, kudos for Doug Wilson to figure out how to get rid of those last 2 years. And to really put a bow on this before we wrap up, I was in Tahoe a few weeks ago, and they've got the futures for who the odds for who they think is going to win the Stanley Cup literally come out the day after the cup is hoisted. And the Sharks were 20-1 at that point. Fast forward, 7-8 weeks, and what has happened for the Sharks? Nothing. Hansen's gone. Bodker's gone. We all know Ward is pretty much gone. But no significant additions, a couple of extensions, whether it's DeMello or Hurdle or what have you, but no significant addition. I mean, we all knew they kind of put all their eggs in the Tavares basket, but no significant addition. And 6-7 weeks later, now they're 13-1. So I guess you call that addition by subtraction.
Well, sometimes going with the young players, if you have the right mix of, if you're putting your young players into situations where they're not being asked to do too much, it can work out extremely well for a team. Like bringing in a veteran who can't play doesn't work. We had that forever in Edmonton.
With Hansen.
Exactly. And they can take up opportunity. There's opportunity costs. Someone else would have got that ice. So maybe there's two or three guys on your farm team that are ready to go. So you just never know, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of talk right now about Suomela and Gambrell. A lot of hoping that they'll be like maybe the next version of a Timo Meier, or a young guy that can take that next step. So,
yeah.
Oh, man. It's good to talk hockey in August, isn't it?
We do it all summer.
Yeah.
Every day. Well, our blog is going every single day. And you know what? The most popular time for our blog, other than the playoff run we had a few years ago, is always in June and July.
People,
transactions period.
Oh, of course. Yeah. You see everything in the draft and so much to pay attention to. But I don't know. It feels like August, just those first 2 weeks in August. Time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. We do our prospect series now. So,
yeah.
Alrighty. All
right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And you can find David Staples on the Edmonton Journal, edmontonjournal.com, and your Twitter handle
at D Staples.
There you go. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for checking out another podcast from TealTownUSA.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us at Tealtown USA on Twitter and on Instagram, and make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit that notification button to find out the next time we go live. And finally, make sure you subscribe to the SoundCloud account for Tealtown USA to catch all our exclusive audio programming.